I'm Lewis Ludlow, and you're listening to Cherry Jam.
Hello and welcome to Series 5, Episode 26 of Cherry Jam. Myself, Ed Price, Russ Brooks, Jim Harley. We are trophy winners. For the first time in 9 years, Gloucester have picked up a trophy. For the first time in 13 years, they've won the cup. Champione, champione, ole, ole, ole. So, we are very happy, Pod. Gloucester win against Leicester on Friday night. At King's Home, packed, raucous King's Home. We will be talking about that at length. We will be also chatting around the final round of the Six Nations, particularly around England and the improving performances. Unfortunately, the wrong end of a result against France. And also the absolute hilarity of Wales being wooden spooned for the first time since 2003. But we'll start with the moment of the weekend. Gloucester beating Leicester 23-13 at King's Home to win their first trophy since 2015. Lewis Ludlow lifted the trophy and then did it again with Mark Atkinson. And we will touch on Aki in a bit as well. Russ, it was your first home game of the season. It's only fair to start with you. We'll talk about the sort of game in a bit more detail, but just from your point of view, the experience of going to King's Home for the first time in a while, how did you find it?
I mean, it was all right, I suppose. I think it's a bit hard to gauge what it's like overall as a season, because I think that's one of the few sellouts this year. And obviously the final atmosphere is very different.
Yeah,
there was a DJ, and we'll probably touch on everyone's different views on that. There was music. But I thought the atmosphere in the builder was quite good. It felt quite nice. I particularly liked we were queuing for fish and chips for quite a while. Because it would be a busy old day and Ed had a few guests with him. A particular highlight for me was watching Ed break when his daughter joined in on some of the winding up that me and Snowy had been doing, much to the annoyance of others. But that was a particular highlight. So it was good already. Just realizing that without even trying, I've made his life even more hell because his daughter's in on the joke. I don't know, it felt a special night anyway. I mean, 150th year, home finals don't come along for quite a while. I haven't been this year. It's been, personally, there's been a lot going on. Also done the recording with Ed about the previous game, so I was really up for this game, which made it a bit disconcerting that it was a very flat start. So yes, really excited. Yes. You could sense there was something in the atmosphere. I think the crowd were ready to get behind the boys. And I'm trying to be generous. I think the fact, like having reflected on it, I think that first 10 minutes showed a couple of sides that haven't played a lot of rugby for a while.
Yeah, I think that's something definitely that was forgotten when we talk about the game and the coverage of the game. That was mentioned that the first half was pretty awful, and that's a really good point. There hadn't been any competitive rugby for over a month, basically.
And we'd had a couple of friendlies, but quite understandably, we didn't figure in a lot of our first teamers who were in this game. For in particular, Zach Mercer looked like he was trying really hard, and it felt like Leicester were targeting him. There was a lot of nothing bad, but you could see they were trying to wile him up. And people just weren't on his radar. There are a lot of people being passed pop passes who are static and then just getting absolutely leathered, who I'm sure appreciated it. So it was a very bitty, nervy start, which you'd expect. We kicked, this isn't a moment because I understand what we were doing. And I think actually you could see what Barton was trying to do and Englefield, we were trying to pin them back.
Yeah.
I don't think the gate for once, I don't know if the game plan was such a problem as the execution. It was just off, wasn't it? The first half, I totally understood. We were trying to keep Leicester back, make them play from deep, starve them of terror. And let's be honest, it was working reasonably well. Leicester didn't do a lot that first half.
They had the one breakaway by Whiteley, didn't they? The scrum half, which, I mean, if he'd stayed straight, he was in. As soon as he cut inside, he bugged it up. That was about it, really. We
botched one in the second half, so horses for course. But, the fear of Pollard wasn't as bad as we thought. I think we managed them well. Scrum was reasonably competitive, which, I thought was good. You know, we did what we needed to do, but the execution just wasn't quite there first half. And I think that was reflected in the atmosphere went a bit flat. And I think it was just a crowd wanted something to get behind, didn't they? You could see we were ready. And it wasn't that there wasn't a lack of try. There was just wasn't a lot to ignite anyone, was it? It really lacked a spark that first half.
Yeah, on that, Jim. So that first 40 minutes, Russ has kind of made a few really good points around the ring rustiness of both sides. I think one thing to bear in mind, I know people moaning about Gloucester kicking it, and I think there were times, certainly towards the back end of the first half, we were kicking it for the sake of kicking it, but Leicester didn't want to play any rugby either.
No, I think it was your typical cup final. Tense, not wanting to be the first team to make a mistake, because it's almost, you make the first mistake and you go down, and especially, you know, confidence issues, that's really important. My overriding memory from the first half was just unbelievable anger at how offside Leicester were.
Yeah.
And it, you know, to the point of it being an embarrassment that, you know, the officials couldn't see that they were a meter in front of the back foot, maybe more. And I felt I was starting to get really, really frustrated, because it's games like this. And I think, like you said, Russ, about the crowd being maybe a little bit quieter. I mean, I think just the anxiety and kind of been built up in the press beforehand, Ludlow saying, yeah, we've really targeted this game, you know, this tournament, this competition, just kind of heaped on the pressure a little bit, and we've put it out there that this game means more to Gloucester than Leicester. I wasn't listening to Leicester's chatter on it, but I certainly wasn't aware of Leicester. I mean, if it had come up on Twitter or something like that, I'd have probably I'd have probably paid attention to it. I didn't see it. So I think we maybe put a bit of pressure on ourselves in that regard. And I was just thinking that first half, oh my God, we're beating our head against this wall, and we're not getting any, we're not getting that opportunity to get a break, because we're just being smothered by a team that are offside. And I was starting to think these officials look a little bit out of their depth, because suddenly what is a Premiership Cup fixture is a far higher standard, or the players are of a far higher calibre than your regular Premiership Cup fixture. And I just felt, certainly sort of middle part of that first half, I was really worried that the game would kind of just descend into being a really negative affair.
Which it kind of did, to be fair. I mean, that it did. Yeah, I think one of the reasons we started kicking it so much was because we just didn't have the space or time, because Leicester were really on that edge, weren't they?
Yeah, and it was, you know, but in the end, certainly like the end of that first half, I think good captaincy, I would say. You know, we didn't get angry, we didn't start getting frustrated, we just kept doing what we were doing, and gradually got the refereeing team on side with some of the calls, and obviously the yellow cards made a huge difference. And I thought, much as we have done on a couple of other occasions, came out, I thought, you know, when you get that situation at the end of a half, it's kind of take it quick, maximise your yellow card time, opportunity, and going into half time, knowing you've got that advantage, you can really focus the conversation at half time on what you're going to do for the next 10 minutes.
Yeah,
I think you can pressurise a team, because when it happens on the 43rd minute or something, then you've got an idea of, oh yeah, this was talked about. Whereas I'm quite sure that at half time they spent the vast majority of that 15 minutes talking about what they were going to do in the next, in more minute 40 to 50 of that game.
I was just going to add, Jim, I think what we also saw at the end of that half was what kind of lent itself well into the second half, was it was that start of putting pressure on Leicester. They were starting to infringe more and more, and I think that was because we were quite canny in exerting pressure. They were giving away a lot of penalties around the breakdown at the Rucks and at Moors, and I think we kind of, what I think we did well was we kept going into that area and putting that pressure on them and forcing them into those infringements, and it kind of built well. I did, you know, I'll be honest, I did think, oh, should we have gone for the corner again? But in hindsight, it was quite right to take the free. What I never ever want us to do again, on a different note, is a tap penalty.
I was going to say, we'll come on to the tap penalty in a second, because ironically it did lead to our first try. But just on a wider point around that sin bin, and the first sin bin for Theobald Thomas, I was very much of the opinion that actually it was a right decision at the time to go for the points, as you said, Jim, maximize that sin binning, because we've seen it so many times that if a team knows that they're down to 14 men and you put it into the corner, rightly or wrongly, what tends to happen is the ref in their mind has a reset and it takes 2-3 penalties or something really serious to go wrong for them to then dish out another yellow card or to start penalising a team properly again. And I thought, actually, look, we're struggling. We haven't really got into their 22 much in that first half. Let's get the ball over the post. Let's get points on the board. We can reset, get inside. And it kind of leads me on, I'll come on to your point about the tap in a second, just lead you on to the sort of the difference makers, I think, in that second half. And the first one we have to start with, it was Jamal. I mean, we were really delighted to see Val back, but clearly he's not quite up to speed fitness-wise. And I'm not sure, I did wonder actually, watching the replay, it looked like he took a bit of a high shot on the final play. And I did wonder whether there was maybe a worry about concussion or something like that. But we may never know. But Jamal in the second half was absolutely superb again. Yeah. Destroyed Hayes. Absolutely destroyed him.
And I think I'm a big fan of Hayes. I really like Hayes. Yeah. I think he's got quite a bright future. And he did put Val under a bit of pressure, I think. And to be fair, Val had some good moments. Val was Val in that first half.
He got a great turnover, didn't he?
That turnover was classic him. I think he's asking a lot. In hindsight, I understand why you played him in that final, but he's going to take a bit of time to come back. That's his first game in the year. But yeah, I thought Jamal had a big impact in that second half as well, Ed. And the scrum, because there were a few where they had a go at us, didn't they? It was a bit back and forth in the scrum. I don't think either side had dominance. In the second half, I don't recall us being pressured in the scrum at all. And I thought he was superb.
Yeah. Jim, your thoughts on Jamal and his impact as he came off that bench in the second half?
We went from scrums that were, I'm not going to say a lottery, but it wasn't, we didn't have
a bit of a stalemate, wasn't it, really? There wasn't a huge...
It was kind of, you know, a team might get a little bit of a nudge, but there was, you know, definitely no dominance from either side. And when he came on, made a huge difference. It went from being, actually, we've knocked it on, there's a good chance we'll get a penalty at this scrum. It was a real shot in the arm, I think, for the rest, like for the second rows, for the rest of the pack. That here we go, I'm tiring, but I'm going to put in that extra effort, because all of a sudden we've now got a little bit more going forward. And I think kind of he's an incredible character at motivating his team. He just seems to have this way of engaging the players around him and getting them playing, you know, that for that last 10, 15 minutes, you know, before they get subbed, potentially, just giving that little bit more.
I mean, again, I thought if I'd had my way, I'd have said he was, I think he got man of the match from the fans. I think that the Gloucester supporters picked him as player of the match. But the, you know, I think quite understandably as well, the pundits on the TV picked Cam Jordan, and he was another big difference maker.
He's
absolutely
superb.
Immense.
I think
the thing, sorry, I'll come on to you. The key bit for me is we all know, you know, line out, there's going to be that sort of bread and butter. But I think the thing that really I thought surprised me actually was the carrying. This week particularly, just the level of carrying that he was doing.
I think he's shown it before, he can carry. And I think, you know, we're seeing it more with the game plan, a little bit more of giving the players the opportunity to carry. And I think that's always been what we've said about the game plan, wasn't it? We don't actually know who our ball carriers are because the game plan hasn't allowed for that. I mean, his finish for the try was superb. Yeah. I mean, he rolled out of one and took two over the line from a static pickup as well.
Static pickup with the ball rolling back towards him as well, which is never easy.
I thought both our second rows were superb. I thought Freddie Clark had a good game. His pass.
Oh, for Thorley.
Thorley. I mean, if that was Cipriani a few years ago, everyone would just be purring about it. You know, he's really shown his skill set lately, hasn't he? I thought he was superb. And I think what did change in the second half was Barton was willing to ship the ball out. And in that second half, I think I'm quite... We'll come on to what we've lost in our centres. And the rumours are we're not replacing them. And I think you see probably why we don't necessarily need to. Because I thought Seb Atkinson in the second half was superb. I've really liked what him and Max Llewellyn have shown us defensively. But I think we also saw what Max Llewellyn can do ball in hand as well. I was a fan from what I saw in Cardiff. That game, you could see those two were really having a lot of fun with the ball. And then Ollie Fawley started benefiting. Ollie had some good moments in attack as well when he was given the ball in a bit of space. So it just, that little change, wasn't it? We weren't willing to kick the ball away so much. And I think that came from pressure. And yes, we scored our first few tries against 13 men, but that was that constant pressure of forcing Leicester to go down to that many, and that came from that change. I think we just kept hold of the ball a lot more, didn't we?
Well, how often do we go up against 13 men and go, you know, there might be a six seven minute period where we're playing against 13 and we lose that period 3-0?
Yeah,
because what we do is we put in huge amounts of pressure, and a team very much like Leicester, very professional. They take the option of doing something they shouldn't. They get the yellow card, but it's not quite a penalty try. And they go again, and Gloucester kind of lose a bit of focus. They get frustrated. Oh, it's a yellow card. Well, we'll just have another rollover maul or whatever. And it fires Leicester up. They go, right, now there's 14 of us. We're going to compete even more strongly. And it's like 3 or 4 minutes, and then maybe there's another yellow card. But what Gloucester did on Friday night was they got the yellow card, and it's like, right, that's happened. We're going into the second half hard, really hard. This is what we're going to do. And it resulted in another yellow card. And then they went, we're going to go even harder for another 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. And they just attacked really, really strongly, great control, and it put Leicester under so much pressure that actually in that very short window of opportunity you score a couple of times, and you know, the first half very low scoring, so you know how important those scores are going to be over the course of the 80. And you know, it's very much like Saracens have done fantastically in the past. They turn it on. They really go 100% for a short period, and they blow teams away. And I felt we almost did that. We went really, really hard. Leicester were just not able to compete with us. And we got ourselves a big jump on the scoreboard that obviously Leicester never came close to really getting back into the game.
No, and I think that school. Sorry, Ed. I just wanted to. I think that school board pressure was so nice to see. I know in particular, Loz will probably be so happy that we were taking three, building pressure. And I think that's something I do hope we take into the season, because it's different because it's cut rugby. I know that. But so you're not necessarily, we weren't worried about getting a bonus point, were we? But that building, it gave us a buffer. And I do hope that we take that forward going forward. Like you said, Jim, take the points when they're on offer, build the score, then look to see what comes after. That
bonus
was point, so
bonus
nice.
Points will come. Bonus points will come if you get, if by constantly kicking the threes, taking the penalty and getting back into those areas of pressure, you're not going to get, you're not going to get loads of yellow cards by constantly failing to score a try. But you are going to get lots of yellow cards if the penalty count is just every time there's a penalty, you take it, kick it, another penalty, take it, kick it.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, 12 points. 12 points is, you know, that's two tries for an opposition team. But actually scoring four penalties, you know, from in and around the sort of the 10-meter to the 22 area, I mean, that's relatively easy to do if you've got a team that are committing those fouls. And
well,
you've just got to punish them.
Leicester had to play from deep, didn't they? And that will happen in the Premiership. If you're 12 points ahead with 60 minutes to go, and it's a team that needs to win a match or needs a point, like you say, Jim, that score is going to make them have to start playing differently to how they'd like to. It allows you to control the game. So yeah, it was nice to see, wasn't it? It was not us going, let's get those drive overs, which we know is improving. But it was like, no, get the points, get out of here. And it gave us that buffer towards the end, didn't it? When Leicester, we all knew Leicester would come back. They had to, but we were comfortably ahead. So to me, it was a weird one. I know we all got annoyed when Snowy was like, oh, I think this game's won. And we're like, why? Why would you say that?
With 8 minutes to go, I don't care how many points
we're
in front.
It was one of those ones where we were thinking it, but please don't put it out there. But yeah, it was nice to see us be in a comfortable position because we built a score.
Just to go back to your point a few minutes ago, though, Russ, about the tap penalty, I agree entirely. Never again. Or if we're going to do it, just let Zach Mercer do what he wants to do and then everyone else follow it. Because I mean, again, the irony being that we got that from that scrum, we ended up getting the penalty and Englefield goes quick and goes to Seb Atkinson. But it's just at times like that, just keep it simple.
Well, it was a weird one, Ed, because Austin Healey, I watched the game back, and side note, BT never used that camera angle.
TNT
again.
Don't
it
ever
was
use
worse
that.
Than I thought. It was, people were moaning, and I was like, oh, this will be this typical. It was awful. You can't follow a game from that weird tracking cam. But anyway, Healey made a very good point. You do that when teams are expecting you to do the big second hooker or props tapping and rumbling over and keeping them guessing. We haven't even tried that. So why go for a trick play if people...
And more importantly, Russ, the really basic stuff was they were down to 13 men.
Yeah.
And at that point, so you've got one off in the scrum already. They're going to have to replace that person in the scrums. Yeah. So they... You're going to lose a back probably, or another player in the pack. You go for the scrum anyway. You were middle of the pitch.
Yeah.
Go for the scrum anyway.
Go for a scrum, and your centre can't fail to score. There's going to be so much gap.
Or do what Englefield eventually did and go, oh, there's numbers. Or tap, draw the man, and then just give it to a big centre to bash over.
Llewellyn from 5 minutes out is going
to
probably
score. For Atkinson, that's so easy. Yeah. It's so easy to score that when you've got all the defensive back line are caught in two minds, because they know they've got to drift, but they can't drift because there's no one on their inside to. Yeah.
Well, that's so what like, that's what you can see. Hassel Collins,
the overlap situation. Yeah, it's like
I have to go.
Oh, he's past it. I've already drifted because there's two people outside, but now I've left the gap. Oh, and it's the whole point of, you know, every back's move is just to create an overlap, isn't it? That's all you're trying to do.
Yeah.
In the backs, and when you've already got an overlap because of yellow cards, you just need to just You just need to put it through hands. And it's also, how many times can we scream? Just say, just pass the ball.
It's recognizing skill sets, isn't it? Again, Healy made that point. I love McGuigan. I'm a big fan. And I thought until his injury, he was having quite a good game again. Big hits, carries.
Yeah.
But what he doesn't do is have a 10-meter cutting edge clinical spin pass in him, does he? Don't make him tap and try and pass off the ground like a nine. If you want him to do something, tap and try and rumble over. It was just one of those ones where you're like, this, we're too, being too cute for our own good.
And exactly.
We just, reverted. Just as a, sorry, Ed, go on.
As I say, you're entirely that. You're too cute for our own good. And then, I mean, again, it was nowhere near a perfect loss of performance, even in that second half. That first 20, 25 minutes of that second half, I thought Gloucester played the type of rugby we want to see them play. You know, they weren't throwing it around with abandon. They were being sensible. When we had the opportunity to kick for territory, we did. But when we did put it through the hands, we looked dangerous. But I'm pretty sure if Max Llewellyn could have that time again and Freddie Clark could have that time again, they'd just look to their left and Ollie Thorley would have been under the post. And that would have been the game straight away there.
Sure Forlow will be letting them know for a long time. You know, he can remind them of that one now, can he? Yeah.
I think in the defence for Freddie Clark, and I do, when you look back and you actually see Thorley was a lot deeper than you initially would have thought. He's about probably maybe a metre deeper than he needed to be. We'd want him to be. But yeah, you just need Freddie just have a quick look up on his left hand side. I mean, it was a guaranteed try, wasn't it?
Yeah, especially Forlow has been in form again, hasn't he? It's nice to see him get a run of games. He's probably not scoring the amount of tries he deserves to for his effort at the moment, but I think he's not far off playing as well as we know he can and he should. And he's been very unfortunate with injuries and that hit he put in towards the end of the game. Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's nice. He's a player, I think, who definitely deserves to have a trophy in his cabinet, isn't he? He's been here a while. He's playing good again. And it just shows it's good to see him back from injury, getting a sustained run. But yeah. He would have wanted that ball, wouldn't he?
Jim, that tackle, Russ mentioned it, that, you know, Leicester had scored their try with about 6 minutes to go, 5 minutes to go. And you could feel that tension starting to build again in the crowd.
Massive. It's a momentum changer.
Yeah. And then that ball comes out and Thorley gets that tackle in. Wow.
Yeah. And he's done it. He's done it many times. He'll do it he's a momentum changer in attack and defence. You know, that was a period where nerves are high. You know, there was the potential they score again quickly and all of a sudden we're in a single score game. It's, you know, it's going to be one of those. And it was just boom. And it kind of just, it's those sorts of hits totally enthuse a tired team, don't they? They go, everyone, like I was saying, you know, about Jamal and the scrummaging, it's single acts. It's like a 3 second incident on the pitch, but it just lifts everyone to another level and gives and everyone can go another 5 minutes. And when there's only 5 minutes to go and people are starting to tire and they're worried about having another defensive set in the 22, if you could just do something fantastic like that, just get it technically right. And all of a sudden you're in command and you're putting all that pressure back onto the opposition.
And we were down, I think we were essentially down to 13 because McGuigan was properly hurt in that build-up, wasn't he? It was a massive hit for a lot of reasons. But, you know, it, like you said, Jim, massive momentum changer, but it bought us some time because we were struggling. He'd been down a while, down to 13. You're blowing as a defensive, you know, because Leicester were putting a lot of pressure. So, yeah, it was massive, wasn't it? And to get him in touch as well, because it just allowed us to get McGuigan treated and it slowed their momentum right down, didn't it? And gave us the control back.
Yeah, and I just want a quick word for Seb Blake as well. So, you know, you've been watching the entire game on the sidelines. McGuigan's having a storming game. I doubt that McGuigan would have come off. I think McGuigan, if he hadn't have been injured, would have played the full 80, as did Kirill, another shout out for Kirill for his incredible set. You know, another amazing effort for a prop to go full 80. But Seb Blake comes on, his first line out is like on his own 10, basically 10 meters out from his own line. He's got to nail this. If he cocks this up, it could be bad. And he nails that throw. And I thought, you know, fair play. That's a massive pressure situation for still a very young lad. And that was really good to see. And just more widely, just before we kind of go on to the atmosphere and a few other bits and pieces, I thought, you know, that the players that you expect to sort of step up, they did in different ways. I thought Zach Mercer took a lot of the pressure and a lot of the away from a lot of the other players. So he was carrying all the time for Gloucester in that first half. Didn't get the reward he would probably normally do, but was still going, getting over the gain line, bringing players, tackling, you know, bringing two, three players into those situations. You know, Ruin, for example, again, shoot loads of carries, not as many meters as he normally does, but just doing that donkey work, that hard work, and get, you know, getting the ball, rucking it up, trucking it up, and getting us to a position where we can then just calm everything down. I thought Ludd's captaincy was, I mean, obviously we've won, so it's going to be spot on, but I think he got a lot of decisions right. I think the way that he handled certain situations was really well, was really good. In terms of the sort of overall, you know, the guys, like young lads like Hurl and Hathaway having to come on, you know, early on in the game when George Barton went off with an injury. Lloyd Evans had another good game. You know, fair play to him. We keep writing him off, to be honest. But he's one of these guys who's never let you down, and it did really well. I have to think your point about George Barton, though, Russ, I just want to come on to. I mean, I think first half, he really, really was struggling. I thought we were going to have to replace him anyway, because I don't think I'm sure he's, by his own standards, he would admit that first half was not his finest 40 minutes. But once he got a little bit more freedom and the ability to start running the ball with a bit more space, that obviously gave him that confidence. And then you could see that change in the second half. And he looked more comfortable.
It wasn't just him, Ed, was it? I think it's always, fly halves always stand out. If your fly half isn't playing well, there's no hiding place. It's a bit like a goalkeeper in football, isn't it? If you make a howler, everyone sees it. And I think, I think some of that is that factor of a lack of game time, because he was much better second half. And Englefield as well. Englefield, what I like about him is he doesn't do anything special, doesn't do anything fancy. And we were all a bit like, is he the kind of signing we want? He's that nine you want that doesn't do anything flash, nothing fancy. He just does all his basics very well. And, you know, I thought he was like that in the game as well. A couple of kicks too far in the first half. Very, very solid in the second half. And I don't know if necessarily scrum halves are very easy position to be solid, because, again, a lot of pressure. So, and he's still young. And, you know, I thought I can't think of anyone who had a game where you're like, there's a room. Everyone did something that counted at some point, I think.
Yeah. And it has to be, because, you know, for a final and for a win in a final, you have to stand up. It's difficult to carry people and have people have bad performances. We'll just move on to the atmosphere, though. So obviously, as you mentioned, that it was crackling before the game. As Jim, you mentioned, it kind of died off a little bit in that first half, understandably, because there wasn't a lot really to talk about. I mean, it was fairly dull. Well, it was awful. Let's be honest. That first 40 minutes as a spectacle was appalling. But as soon as we got that first try, it felt like a good old-fashioned King's Home atmosphere under the lights, I thought, Jim.
Yeah, it was great. It was really noticeable from people that I stand next to in the shed. I was getting a lot of conversations from their messages being sent that it was filling up like really early.
Yeah,
much earlier than it normally would for a game, and they weren't the regular people. And you know, in the Pelican beforehand, it was busy. Probably standard sort of busy for a Friday night fixture, but different people. It wasn't your usual league crowd that were there. It was very much a cup final. So I had old school friends that don't live in Gloucester anymore that had come up to see family. There was it was a bit like a Christmas sort of game
where
you do get that extended,
yeah,
that sort of extended family, special event type of crowd. I mean, my wife was there and she doesn't go all that often now. So I thought that was really good because, especially after the first half, of as we discussed, when the action kind of got going, the crowd got going too, and there was a good amount of crowd interaction, a good amount of noise, and people did not want to leave come the final whistle either. I mean, it was great. I mean, it was a bit of a tease bringing the big kind of horseshoe of championship winners via the shed. Have a look at what you could have won if you bought one of these expensive seats, and then they plonked it over facing the grandstand.
I made that joke on the TNT because literally the last time we won that cup at Newcastle, the Gits had their back to us then. So I got a nice, and they literally put my photo. It's the one photo of the lot we gave up. So it was deja vu all over again. Oh, I'll get to enjoy the I could peer through the little gap in the circle and see Aki lift the trophy. Yeah. Sorry, Jim.
No, I get it because, you know,
you want it to be framed by the shed. That's the thing. You want the shed to frame the trophy.
I'm not sure. As a frame goes, you would think the framing of the grandstand would be a better backdrop.
It's also where the cameras are on that side anyway.
It's a tricky one.
You're never going to please everyone, are you?
You can't do anything about it. I mean, wherever you put it, you're going to annoy someone on you.
Unfortunately, we aren't lucky enough to have a Wembley Stadium where you can go up the steps and lift it in the stand. So, which is a shame.
I don't think they probably want to be doing it.
No,
halfway up the 1873 seats.
But just on the, I guess it might sort of. 2 pence worth on the atmosphere. I know, as Russ kind of alluded to, I took my daughter, my godson went, and we've actually got a visitor staying with us at the moment, a young lady, who a Japanese student, has her first experience of rugby full stop. And just as a little aside here, I loved about this is the fact that, you know, sport is universal, isn't it? And the our Japanese student was singing the Gloucester chant very, very quickly. She joined in with the Eeyores, and we were actually having quite a very, very funny conversation around the fact that the end of class bell to alert the end of, you know, it's the end of their particular class, is the Big Ben chimes. So we did make the point that the next time she's in class, she will be sort of singing along, same old Leicester, always cheating. Which is quite nice. But yeah, I mean, what an amazing atmosphere for someone who is entirely new to rugby. You can't, I mean, she told me she had a wonderful time, really enjoyed it. She wants to see when the next rugby game she can go to when she's back in Tokyo. So, you know, we've got a potential convert to the game, and our head of Japanese Sports Association is already sorted.
Don't forget, we met the Bahrain contingent.
I was about to say thank you very much for bringing it up. Chris in Bahrain, who stopped us at the door of the Mermaid Fish and Chips, thank you very much for saying hello. I got the feeling you had maybe a couple of pints. I'm sure you won't mind me mentioning that, saying that, but I'm hoping that trip over was well worth it. I'm sure it was. It was lovely to meet you. Thank you very much. It's very kind to say that, you know, you were saying you listen to us every week. God help you. there's a couple of other people who I know who spotted me in the shed, and I think a few other people might have, obviously, you know, Jim and Russ anyway. So, thank you very much for everybody who does listen. As we always say, you know, it really does mean a lot when anybody comes up to us and talks about the pod. It honestly makes it all worthwhile. So, Chris, I'm glad you enjoyed it, mate, and it was lovely to meet you. Moving on, just a final bit of the atmosphere and the day and the game. Obviously, we had Marvin Humes before the game and at halftime. I thought, you know, we're not massive fans of the pre-game hype and all the rest of it, the mid-game hype, but I thought he did a good job, actually, in keeping the crowd entertained and engaged, and, you know, he played all the hits. I know you're not a fan of Sweet Caroline, mate, but it's a crowd favourite. No.
Yeah, I think it's, is it a crowd favourite, or is it just
a
drunk
crowd
favourite?
I go as a crowd favorite, mate. I love it. I really enjoy it.
I am not a fan. I am not a fan of that record. It really just winds me up, and I don't know why. I think it's a bit football, and I think it's a bit simple. Maybe is the word. It's just.
Have you met people from Gloucester?
Chance is a two-syllable
word.
He did pick a good playlist. I'll give him that. He picked a good playlist. He turned out some records. My issue is, and I haven't got a clue how much it cost to hire him, but I just find it hard to believe that there's value in however much he was paid. There could have been Disco Dave from Abbeymead that could have done it for 50 quid.
I get the feeling that was probably a Premiership rugby thing. I don't necessarily think
Sorry, Jim.
It's just, it's music in the PA system, isn't it? And I like them to run out onto the pitch to a good track, but I'm very, very keen, especially on a game like Friday night, where there are people that I haven't seen for years, potentially there. Although I didn't even attempt to speak to Neil, which was maybe a little bit of a shame and a waste because I haven't seen him in years. But it's like, that's my opportunity at halftime, is to have a chat with all these people. Like, I just turn around and have a chat with the people I'm stood next to, 15-minute window, and then it's back into the rugby. And if they're blaring out music, creating this atmosphere, I was like, is that really what I want? I don't know. And it is, it's horses for courses. Some people love it. Others not so.
Russ?
I think would I want it every week? Probably not. But I do feel like at the end of the game, I think it added something. I think it made it special. It's a final, it's on big telly. What did Gloucester get out of it? Where's the added value? It's a Friday night game, which we know the atmosphere is special anyway, but if it gets a few people interested in rugby to come to see that special atmosphere, and figure that was at King's Home, I'm all for it. I think it does add something. I don't know if I want it after every single try or not, but then I think me and Ed had this conversation. That's kind of on the crowd to really make that count. And
it's a difficult one, that though, on the scores. I mean, to be fair, that's been in all season. And this is how things have changed. We remember that the first time they tried to do this and it was in the Ryan Walkinshaw era, and they tried to bring in music after the scores, and the crowd started booing it and got really anti it. But it's a different landscape now.
Yeah, I think that's the key, Ed, is things have moved on a little. And I think, look, however you look at it, rugby is still a sport that needs to find an audience and grow and keep going. And I think we rag on the club sometimes for not always doing enough. I think at this point I'd like a bit of credit for trying to do something.
Here's
an idea. How about the club just put out a poll? What songs you want to hear every time there's a try? Songs you want to hear every time there's a goal? And then you go, well, you chose it. Don't give them a choice of yes or no.
That's a really good idea.
Not a bad idea. You've got to be careful, because let's not forget, a few years ago when a certain Mr. Cipriani and some certain rumours came out, is still one of my favourite moments, was the playlist they put on
before that.
You won't get that. I think that's the thing. The world's a different place. I think that is quite a good compromise, isn't it, Jim? Is say what's on. But
get some engagement.
You've got to get some engagement. I mean, but we're talking about it, so it's done something, hasn't it? It's got.
I mean, we're talking about it. Probably most people don't care. It's just that actually we're old.
I definitely think it did help add to the party atmosphere at the end.
100%. I certainly agree with you, Jim. I wouldn't, and Russ, I wouldn't want it that halftime show every week. I do think there's no point. But I haven't necessarily got an issue with the. After tries being scored, you play some music. I think it has to be the right music. It has to be something that people can go and get involved. I mean, the fact that, Freed from Desire, everyone knows it. Again, a little bit football-y, but there's nothing wrong with that.
That's becoming a rugby anthem for me. They were playing it in France.
Yeah. I mean,
I know my under 14s, they play it like properly, blast it out of their little boom box in the dressing room before they come out for a game. It's become a bit of a rugby kind of motivational song.
Mm. And, you know, we might yet find a song that becomes ours. You know, some anthem that does work and lend itself, which is maybe where the poll could come into play. Because what was funny, do you remember when the first there was the rumbles, people grumbled when the fat team came out to some music, and then Handy Hazel was like, oh, the Gloucester fans chose it. The Gloucester players chose it. Suddenly everyone liked it.
Everyone likes it.
We could find a song we could get behind. Zombies going free at the moment. Maybe
no,
we
I'm not.
Take
no,
it
no.
It's not.
No.
They're still using it.
Oh,
they're still
are
using
they?
It, and absolutely not.
Well, Zombies an apt song, isn't it? Because it's about a team that's died and is trying to come back to life. So maybe it'll work.
I mean, I'm not entirely sure that was the meaning of the song, but we won't go into that too
much. I meant the definition of zombie general. Sorry.
Oh, I see what you mean. From a rugby point of view, possibly. But I think the one song that I just thought, you know what, I think that would be quite cool. And only because I know a little bit. So Three Little Birds was the one song when they played it, he played it towards the end of the first half, end of the halftime break. He played Bob Marley, Three Little Birds. And I don't know, I quite like that. I thought that was quite a nice one. You could do that before the game starts. Like, that's the everyone joins in that song. Then the team run out and away you go.
What Gloucester needs is a good band. Because you can't play the words.
We don't really have EMF is the only one I can think of.
Yeah, you need something like that. Because, like, being a Leeds fan, I loved seeing all that. I predict a riot, the fans singing along to that. You want some? I get your point, Ed. And I think something we can really get behind.
Leeds have got
ours.
The benefit of having the best football club song, maybe. Well, the like individual club song probably in all of football, though. In the Leeds song, so that hurts me as a fan, but easy to pick.
But I mean, like that. So I mean, it helps having a band like the Kaiser Chiefs from the town, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly,
a band named after the football club. So
yeah,
you know.
So there's all of those things. We're going to pause.
Isn't Ollie Alexander from Years and Years? Isn't he a Forester?
He is a Forester. I'm not sure that's. I mean, unless we want to go fully Eurovision, we could have him as the new Eurovision song could be our song.
You never know.
You never know.
He could come out with some absolute banger.
A team that generally gets nil per hour in Europe. There's a link there, isn't there?
Exactly.
I think he's pretty good.
I'm sure my age has passed me by a bit now. I haven't heard it properly so far.
Well, as I said, you know, if we've already touched on and ruined NFL for a lot of people, so let's crack on with Eurovision. We'll do that in a few weeks' time.
It's a shame Loz isn't here for this conversation because I'm missing his glazed look while we talk about all of
this. I just love the thought of Loz's input into Eurovision. It would be spectacular. And I'll wait. Should we wait?
There's a niche pod. I know we're short on time, but it'd be like Carl Pilkington. We could just have a round on Loz's take on
something that we know he doesn't like. There we go. Right, we're going to pause. We're going to come back. We're going to talk about the final round of the Six Nations and just cover off a few other little bits and pieces.
This is Jamal Ford Robinson, and you're listening to the Cherry Jam podcast.
What's that?
Right. So let's just crack on then. Really, the Six Nations. What an amazing final weekend. I'll touch on a few things. Obviously, Ireland. Congratulations for winning your second championship in a row. Not a Grand Slam, though, was it?
It's almost like they're hard to win, like we were saying.
Almost, a bit like a quarter final. The most hilarious part of the weekend, by a mile, obviously, was Wales getting the wooden spoon for the first time since 2003. And let's be honest, Italy thoroughly deserved their win. They were by far the better team. Wales were absolutely awful, and it was nothing if not hilarious to see Warren Gatland getting properly roasted on the Welsh rugby show. Brilliant, really. If you haven't seen it, some superb journalism by the presenter, and it's well worth a watch. Just a quick one aside that on that Wales Italy game. I'm assuming we've all seen the Neil Jenkins issue situation. I mean, that's got to be a ban, surely, like a proper ban as well.
It's not.
Just it beggars belief that you know grown-ups in professional sport think they're going to get away with anything approaching that kind of behavior. I mean, it wasn't horrendous.
No.
It was just really, really poor form.
I mean,
and yeah, he should get, I mean, I don't think it's not massive, but I think he should get a telling off. You know, he should be making an apology.
It's
a two match ban or something.
He's never struck me as that sort of, he was never that sort of player, was he? You know, I used to be a big fan. He was never that outspoken, so it was weird to him that it was him. I was very surprised it was him. I think what it's systematic. It's not a big thing, Jim. You're right, but it's systematic of this like Razzie Erasmus kind of approach where you can just anyone feels like they can have a pop.
It's the slow and creep, isn't it?
It's that. Yeah, it's exactly that, Ed. It's that slow creep. And was it a big deal? No, but you want to stamp it out now before it comes a big deal, doesn't it? And again, it shows that these rugby values we talk about are not as precious as people say they are. And it just needs stamped now. It was completely unnecessary. You wouldn't accept it from a player, so you shouldn't. It certainly shouldn't accept it from the coaching staff.
Yeah, absolutely right. Yeah. But just a quick aside, well done to Dean Varney. Obviously, he was our representative pretty much of the Six Nations this year. And did really well for Italy, and Italy thoroughly deserved their win, back-to-back wins. I think it's the highest points total ever in the Six Nations, and you know, it albeit for a dodgy decision at the end of the France game, they would have ended up with three wins and in fourth place. So a superb performance by them. Just moving on to the England France game then. Just wanted to. Where's this England team been, Jim? I mean, it just, like, honestly, for the last 2 years, 2.5 years, we've been crying out for an England team that's willing to attack and not throw the ball around with abandon, but at least have a, you know, have a cohesive attacking system and structure. And it's just suddenly from almost nowhere, we look a really exciting and dangerous team again.
Obviously, it worked fantastically well last week against Ireland. And didn't work quite as well against France, are a weaker team than Ireland, but they had a bit more, I think, kind of resilience maybe to bounce back. So they took their chances far better, I think, than Ireland did, and it was really good that England were kind of willing and able to keep on with the quality of rugby that they did in the face of some fantastic counter-attacking. And it's only going to make England stronger if they carry on with that sort of game plan. I mean, there was some huge intensity. They went through some really, really quick plays. I mean, I thought Mitchell again.
Oh, it just makes such a difference, doesn't it?
Yeah. Ruck speed was so fast, and he's demanding players running onto the ball, and players are doing as they're told. They are running on. So it was bang, 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 and you've got big men running into small men, which, you know, get mismatches. We've got small men running round big men. We've got all the perfect mismatches that are what makes rugby great. And then when he needed to, slow it down. This ruck's going to be a 15-second one because it's all going wrong, and it'll be a box kick or it'll be a pass back for a territory kick or whatever. It just showed real maturity, actually, and a real step forward in how England have the ability to play rugby, because when we start playing against the top teams in the Southern, well. Yeah, the top teams from the Southern Hemisphere.
New Zealand, so
your New Zealand, your South Africa's, and your Argentina's, because there are no other strong teams. Yeah.
But is it New Zealand in the summer?
New Zealand, Japan. I think it's New Zealand twice, I think. Japan, we've definitely got Japan at some point.
So it bodes well, because those teams will play very easily against the one dimensional kind of that well, we were trying to play the South African game, but not we never did it as well as South Africa. And you know, the way to beat teams is not to try and be like South Africa, but not be as good as them.
But I think what impressed me, Jim, as well, was our resilience in the first half. That first, was it 20, 30 minutes? France absolutely battered us. They came at us so hard, like, with great rugby, physicality, and we just soaked it up. I thought Genge particularly had a good game. That's one of the best games I had from him. George Martin continues to impress me. He just fronts up, does all the hard work. Some of his clear, there was the one clear out was absolutely ridiculous. I think it was Furbank had scrambled back, slipped, was real trouble. He was going backwards, and I don't know how Martin was able to get back and do the clear out he did that won us the ball. Ford really impressed me by play. He played so flat in the face of that really aggressive French team, and that just allowed so much good play. Freeman, I really like. I think he's really. What's nice is we've let a few players develop. Martin hasn't had a lot of caps, and Freeman, and we're starting to find players who look comfortable. And Freeman, just he hasn't scored a lot of tries, but he looks comfortable on that wing, and I think he
looks
real
a really good
talent.
Player, doesn't he? Well, I mean, it was lovely to see Smith getting a time. I mean, and having Smith and Ford on the same pitch for as long as we did.
Yeah,
I mean, Smith was just again give that lad a bit of space, literally a couple of yards, and he will destroy you.
And Earl was the same, Ed, wasn't he? Let Earl run it hard, like Jim said, that variety. Oh, suddenly we've got a back rower with a bit of gas who can run hard onto a ball. And, you know, France was superb. I mean, Pinot again was just ridiculous. And that try. But we weathered that. In the past, I think that England team would have got absolutely battered. So to see them front up and be resilient and... I don't want to be that fat, but it was a harsh call, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think is right. You look at that call, and actually, I haven't gotten much of a problem with it because it was, you know, that right arm was tucked. It is fundamentally
the letter
it
of the
was,
law.
The issue, as we all know, the wider issue is: should the TMO be calling that? Secondly, how many of those tackles do you see in a game, and they're not called, particularly when you're on the line? I've got no problem at all that call was made. Look, it wasn't a wrap, therefore a penalty. You could argue there's other things that probably England could have done better. I mean, I think fundamentally we're praising England for a lot of good rugby. I thought we, at the same time, France from a attacking point of view, they did exactly how you
Superb,
deal with a blitz.
Yeah.
How do you deal with a blitz? You keep it tight around the fringes and you go bang, 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 and you get extra yards. That just makes the defense disjointed and makes the blitz harder. If you start flowing it out wide, the blitz can do you. And, you know, the French team, they worked out that if we can get the ball, we don't drop it, they can use their power game. But what was really encouraging, as you rightly said though, Russ, was the fact that England stuck with it. And, you know, albeit for a slightly questionable call at the end, I think the right one, but I can understand why people are slightly frustrated by it. It would have been another amazing win.
And we won against Ireland by sticking with it. So that's two games where we've stuck at it and it's, you know, 50-50 on the outcome. I think if you said to us at the start of the Six Nations, I'd have taken where we were, maybe not in terms of the game wins, but to be in a position to see a chance to develop. I was a very disinterested England fan at the start of this Six Nations, finding it hard to see what our team's identity was, finding it hard to be invested. Suddenly I'm excited again by what we've got. And now is the big thing, isn't it? Is what does Borthwick do? If he continues on this journey and let the lads play a bit and show more of this, we've got an opportunity. The risk is don't revert to type in those tall games coming up.
The advantage you've got here for, I suppose, Borthwick has got now is that he had a few retirements at the end of the World Cup. Jim, we're going to probably lose Danny Kerr. Dan Cole looks like he's probably going to be hanging his or he might look to say, I'm going to have to retire from international rugby. Tua Lange looks like he's off to France, to Bayonne. So there's a load of these sort of players that I would argue, Daly's another one, that have kind of been around for a long time, and we're now going to probably see them. Thank you, you've done your service. We're going to get these lads cut to come through and take it to the next couple of years, which is a benefit for Borthwick.
Yeah, of course. I was really pleased that Kerr came back into the squad. He definitely deserves his 100 caps because he's still absolute quality. I think he really missed out under Eddie Jones. I think he should have been back in the squad a few years before when his form was so good. But, you know, I've said before, I think we're probably better as a nation sometimes than others when we kind of rebuild and sacrifice a Six Nations off the back of it. But we absolutely need to start looking to that World Cup, start building. And, you know, even if Dan Cole is the best option as prop, you need to have that conversation with him and say, thanks for your effort. You know, thanks for all the years of service, but you are not going to be playing at the next World Cup. So we need to bring on some players because, of course, we talk about giving players a bit of international experience, but if you bring in a player, and we've seen it with Van Poortvliet, you know, you bring a player in and actually there's something not quite right at this level. They just don't seem to have it. They're fantastic in the Premiership, but they just don't quite have it. So that's where you just got to say, you've got to give yourself time to give players time to then realize they're not there and then give another player time. And for that, you know, that you can't start doing that 2 years out.
Yeah.
So we're already running out of time.
I think Borthwick's got a little bit lucky in this, in the fact that it's just a natural changing of the guard. And I think there are a lot of very talented young players. Obviously the under 20s did wow, what a win for them over in France. What a game, what a win.
Yeah, I haven't seen it yet actually. Where was it? Where did I send the link? Oh, it's on iPlayer, of course.
iPlayer, yeah.
I need to watch that one.
I mean, there's some great
amazing tries, both sides of it, both sides of the game for France and England. Bit of Gloucester involvement in Yoyan Lloyd, Welsh name, English player. There's a lot of things to look forward to in terms from an England point of view. Overall, look, I think, as you said, Russ, we look at this Six Nations and we come out of it feeling positive about England, when actually going into it, we probably wouldn't have been that confident and happy. Just a final couple of things before we finish this week, though. Georgia won their, I think there was their fourth or fifth consecutive European, whatever it is, the Champions Cup, defeating Portugal in the final of that competition. So congratulations, Georgia. Obviously it's reignited that continued discussion around promotion and relegation, and I fully am wholeheartedly behind that now that Wales are finished bottom.
Yeah, definitely. I to be fair, I like Sam Warburton, who I still, you know, not a fan always of the bead pundit. He's head and shoulders above, and I think he makes a good point about having a playoff, and not always all the time, but having a playoff between bottom and top of the two respective tournaments, because it makes it honest. It does give you something to compete for. I mean, that game was a good game, but if Wales and Italy are having to fight for their lives a little bit more, it adds yet another element. And I think it's only good for the competition, you know, because...
You say about a playoff, Russ, but I think just a guaranteed match. So kind of... It doesn't give you guaranteed entry, but so the scenario we've got now, if it was written into like the rules, if you like, that whoever finishes top of that competition, they get to play this team from tier one, and whoever finishes bottom of the Six Nations has to play the team that finishes top of the championship. So it would mean Georgia get to play Wales and Georgia get to play another tier one team, and Wales have to play Portugal, say, you know, as a bit of a thing. So
I think that's a good idea.
It forces more tier one and tier two teams I tell to you compete what would be, against each
what,
other.
But what you can make even, sorry, Rescom.
I was just going to say, I like that idea. And I think the only thing you have to see is me and Ed saw an England A game where Portugal's players weren't available. I think you have to make sure that window
it has to be the international
window.
Oh,
you have to be international. Yeah, so it's a course. Fair. I really like that idea, though, Jim. Yeah,
I think
the other, to get that game growing. Yeah.
The added extra of that, though, I would also say is that whoever, if Georgia win the European Championship, they get to play their game in Georgia.
Yeah,
so it has to be. It has to be because you know that's the day. That's the thing. Look, don't be wrong. There has to be a carrot at the end of this. It doesn't necessarily mean or have to mean that we have promotion and relegation, but it should at least maybe look at expansion. That's possibly the way of looking at it. But that's I think another topic for another day.
Because to be fair, Wales would in that sort of game. Wales at the moment would still beat Georgia. I think.
Yes. Yes, I'd agree.
But what it would do in the short term is it would put to bed that, well, we've won it, you know. But
it would be fucking funny if they didn't win it, though.
Yeah.
But, I mean,
but
Wales,
the more
Wales
exposure
Georgia in the World Cup.
These tier twos.
Yeah,
I know. You know, they did put them. Just one final thing before we go, and thank you again, both of you. The one rumour that's kind of emerged this weekend or over the last couple of days is that Gloucester, and I think Bath as well, are looking at Regan Grace, former winger in the Super League for St Helens. Did join Racing, I think it was, but then like a month after, properly did his Achilles. If you don't want to see it, do not look it up. It's a horrible one. He is a very, very talented rugby player.
He's at Bath at the moment, isn't he? He made his debut last week. Yeah. I really like him as a player. If we signed him, it would be tremendous. It would be even funnier now if we nicked him, literally nicked him from Bath while he's over there having.
Well, he's. I mean, the idea being is that obviously he's there to the end of the season on like a loan stroke trial thing. But basically from next season, he's a free agent and we can in theory sign him. And just one final thing, actually, one final thing on Bath. Just to reiterate, since professionalism, or as Dave on Twitter mentioned, Dave Rogers on Twitter said, since Gloucester became professional, Gloucester have won, was it, I think I said seven, but you could include eight if you wanted to go down the sevens route as well, or nine.
Yeah.
But did Gloucester, you include the championship?
The Zurich championship.
Didn't you miss the power gen in your post?
No, I put
well.
I said the power gen was technically bitter because I got my sponsorship.
Oh, right.
Around.
Yeah.
But yeah, so yes, including, sorry, you're right to say that including the Zurich championship, premiership, championship playoff thing, we beat Bristol. Gloucester have won eight trophies since professionalism. Bath have won two, the last of which was in 2008. There is only one team in the West Country. On that note, thank you very much, guys. Very much appreciated. Obviously, it's back to Welford Road this Friday for the Slater Cup again. Weirdly, wasn't played for last week. So hopefully, Gloucester can bring the Slater Cup home for the first time. It's going to be a difficult one. And we will be talking about that and all the other rugby news next week. Cheers.
Cheers, boys.
Yeah, cheers, guys.